On this afternoon, we are scheduled for a public hearing and then possible work session relative to House Bill 205. This is for the joint, cultural joint interim task force. We have with us today, of course, a brief testimony, Mr. Mike Lindbergh and Mr. Bud Lindstrom. Would you gentlemen like to come forward and state your name and names? And go ahead now. That piggy bank right there is, in case you want to use any acronyms, and it all goes to the American Cancer Society. So.
Okay, no acronyms and not over 2 minutes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Representative Butler, I'm Mike Lindbergh. I'm chair of the Oregon Arts Commission, and for 17 years I was on the Portland City Council overseeing arts and culture issues. I'm also on the board of the Oregon Symphony and worked with arts groups throughout the entire state of Oregon. I'm here today to voice my support for House Bill 2005, a bill introduced by Speaker Sawgrass and also supported by Governor Kitzhaber. I and two other arts commissioners served on a governor's task force, and really we had the challenge from the speaker and from the governor to try to bring our arts, culture, and heritage together throughout the state of Oregon, have all the people work as partners among with each other and with the private sector. You already see a summary of our full report. One of the things I wanted to point out, it establishes a joint interim task force on cultural development that will continue the cultural planning work began by the previous task force. And we structured this in a way so the legislature, the initial one was the governor's task force on culture, now we have the legislature making recommendations or having a couple people that will be represented. It's extremely important that this work goes on. We had people from all over the state that have been gathering in 2 arts and culture summits and on this task force to ensure really that what we do in arts and culture really touches every part of the state. I want to give you examples of the kind of things really that would benefit from establishment of a cultural trust and from continuing the work of this task force. As I said, we're looking at not just like arts groups, but we're looking at small historical and heritage projects like the Old Thompson Mill in Linn County, Brownsville Museum, Four Rivers Cultural Council in Ontario, and of course there are places like the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Ashland that this is a big driver in the economy. We're looking at Da Vinci Days in Corvallis, Cinco de Mayo. We're looking at different festivals, community gatherings in various parts of the state. One of the things I say, just to kind of get to the bottom line, the reason I'm so excited about the idea of this cultural trust is that I really think that it is the starting point of a major cultural renaissance in Oregon, one that will help in tourism, help really build our smaller communities, develop a lot of community pride. And the clear thing that's happened in other states that have done this, like Delaware, Arizona, and Nebraska, is it stimulated tremendous private investment. And as you may know, like every dollar that goes to the Oregon Arts Commission is about $14 in private leverage that follows. And I know in my work in the Portland City Council, when the city stepped forward, what we found is that private sector said, okay, with that leadership, we'll step forward and have our corporate contributions were substantially increased in the regional area around Portland. So with that, I would conclude my testimony, and Bud Lindstrom was the chair of the task force and the governor's task force.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Representative Butler and others, thanks for taking the time to listen to us. It was my privilege to chair this initial task force. I'm here really representing Northwest Business for Culture and the Arts and the business community throughout the state, of which I've been a part for about 40 years now. And I think a couple of things that I just might add to what Mike said, and that is this initial task force that really brings this recommendation to you consisted of people from all areas of what we would call cultural life in Oregon. If you can define that word, by the way, that committee would love to see your definition of what is culture, because we groped with that word for a long time, because it does influence a lot of people a lot of different ways. But I think the interesting part was these were very smart people. They came from all around Oregon. They came from all kinds of different interests in cultural things. But what they all concluded was this wasn't about the Oregon Symphony and the Art Museum. It was about the kinds of places that Mike just mentioned that are scattered all over the state. I'm beginning to find them as I go around finding out people's interest in talking about this, that there are so many things about our heritage and history and culture in this state that are so vital and yet that are struggling. And it's also not about elitism. I think that I for one, have heard so many times from so many sources that the arts are only for elite people. And what this is about is being sure that's not true, that people of all means have the opportunity to share cultural experiences, whether they have the money or not. And as you may or may not know, most of the arts organizations, for instance, today only get about half of their income from their ticket sales. And the rest they have to get from philanthropic places and from governmental sources. And I'm disappointed that Oregon has to sit ranked last of all the states in the union in terms of public support for the arts. And I don't think that's what any of us want. And I'm not here to make a big issue of that. But simply to say that one of the things that this committee really focused on was that the public needs to support culture in this state, that they can't rely just on the private side. And yet, as Mike said, it does stimulate private giving immensely. The city of Portland put $1 million extra money aside for culture in within the city area that has to be matched 4-to-1 in the private sector, and that's going to happen. And so that's the exciting part about the dollars from my perspective. But really what this bill is about is that that task force had so many concepts and ideas which were kind of got focused but need to be developed. We need to really come forth with saying how is the public to be involved in the cultural life of this state. And that's what we really want to do, is just to develop that work. We need some funding in order to do that, because the task force worked before with some of the existing people from these agencies from the state, and they just don't have the time to be able to really focus on getting some work done. We want to get out in the communities and talk to people and find out what they want to really do about a renaissance of culture in this community. So that's what it's really about. It's just enabling us to get back to work and really make something happen in a lot of states around this country. There's a real, renewed interest in culture, and we want to get on the bandwagon and lead it, not be any followers.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lundstrom. Are there questions of the committee members for Mr. Lindbergh or Mr. Lundstrom? Senator Lemon is recognized.
Thank you very much, Mike. Nice to see you again here. Yes. And do you have any definition of what your culture is? Because I'm struggling, because it's so broad. And I'd like to see a copy of the definition of the culture.
We never resolved a definition of culture that I recall.
Well, I guess he had one, didn't he?
Use three words.
Yeah. Three words. What's the three words?
Heritage, humanity,
and the arts. We did. In fact, I'll give you this. We actually wrote a definition. Our culture, our collective culture, has diverse and powerful roots, including all of Oregon's unique heritage of places, people, and ideas. While it expresses itself through the talents of those who work in the arts, humanities, and heritage, Oregon's culture is profoundly manifested in the hearts, minds, habits of all Oregonians. As private persons and citizens, Oregonians are enriched by cultural civilizing powers. It's the means by which we Oregonians discover and distinguish ourselves. With deliberate preservation and cultivation, culture can be both a renewable and a renewing resource with which Oregonians can face the future. Now that's a statement, and it's kind of nebulous. We were able to describe culture better than we could define it.
And yeah. Follow up, Senator Lynn.
I have a deal to introduce that the May of each year, the Asian American Heritage Month,
mm-hmm.
and then this will be it's passed up from my committee, who will be coming to the floor fairly soon in the Senate. And also the President Clinton declared, every president declared that the month of May be the Asian Pacific Islanders Heritage Month. Mm-hmm. I just got a copy yesterday. And I hope we might be able to incorporate many minorities, even 30. The Asians is not just one group. There are more than 30 different nations in ancient history. Just like mentioned a moment ago, that the Cinco de Mayo, I hope the whole thing could be incorporated in this program.
We talked a great deal as a committee about that, as well as Native American. We had a Native American on our committee. that the culture needs to be recognized as not just what I, as a kid who grew up in Salem, might think culture was, but a much wider vision.
Can I respond to that too, Senator? Because I think that is so critical. You know, frankly, if you look at the makeup of the state's population over the last 20 years, it's been increasingly diverse. Mm-hmm. So one of the things you want to do, I think, is support the various ethnic groups and their community integration, understanding they're holding on to their history and their heritage. At the same time, by teaching all Oregonians about this rich diversity of culture that we have, everybody, it brings people together. So that's what we find. In fact, I just had an example last night. They brought in Estonian dancers and African drummers to a community center in East Portland, out near your area, and all these other people came in and they got to learn about another culture and meet people from that culture just because they were all at a community center together. So it's just one example, I think, of the value of it.
Okay, if I follow up, I want to follow up one comment. We have many sister cities around the nation, around the other countries. We might be able to incorporate those programs. Also, we have a sister state. One in Cholanambo province is our sister state, and a whole the country of the Taiwan, and is also our sister country, our sister state. So I hope this whole thing could be incorporated in that.
So what it's about stimulating that very such thing you're talking
about. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator. Are there any other questions? Being sufficient for a quorum, let's see, do we want to go ahead and have a report from Legislative Fiscal Office first before we go into work session?
You could do it in work session, if you like.
Why don't we go ahead and go into work session then on Senate Bill, on House Bill 205.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, based on the testimony that we had yesterday, I'm making the following recommendations that the subcommittee approve House Bill 2005A, approve the general fund allocation for the task force, and move the bill to the full Ways and Means Committee with the following amendments. Amend House Bill 2005A to add there is appropriated to the Economic Development Department for the biennium beginning July 1, 1999, out of the general fund, the amount of $200,000 for the Cultural Joint Interim Task Force. I removed the recommendation for a position based on the testimony from the agency that no position was needed, that they can contract for those services.
Are there any questions for Senator Troll?
I just was wondering if the agency is okay with Legislative Fiscal's recommendation. There's no problem.
Right.
Mr. Chair, I would move the article recommendation.
It's been moved that we approve the recommendation of Legislative Fiscal relative to passage of House Bill 205 and passage to the full Ways and Means Committee, the due pass recommendation. Are there any objections? There being no objections, we will pass with the amended language to the full Ways and Means due pass recommendation. Is it ready? Let's see. For the full Ways and Means, Representative Messerly. Representative Messerly will carry the bill to the full Ways and Means. And to the Senate, Senator Lynn. Would you like to do that?
And may I suggest, if she is willing, it may be that the speaker may want to carry this on the floor. Could you verify that? And if not, I will assume that it will be Representative Messier.
Okay, that'd be fine. Thank you very much. We appreciate you coming today. Thank you for your testimony. It's an honor to have coming.
Is this not for me or you?
Okay, we are scheduled for Senate Bill 5536, a technical work session. So let's go ahead and open up a work session relative to Senate Bill 5536. This is a Senate bill upon which we have worked previously, and we have some additional language which we need to go ahead and insert there. Mr. Wyatt.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, before you is a proposed amendment to the AIM Grove Senate Bill 5536, just prior to it going to the Senate floor, legislative council called and informed us that it needed some technical adjustments. It admitted for the term for the appropriating money for the emergency board for the biennium beginning July 1st, 1999. And they have a few other suggested wording changes, purely technical in nature. You have the proposed amendments to the AIM Grove Senate Bill in front of you. And behind that, I've attached a Hammond Grove version of it on Senate Bill 5536, so you can see what the changes result in.
Sure. That's not a technical position of the bill. We passed it out of here, didn't we? Did it go to full ways and means? Did it come back to us? Do we need to motion to pull it back? What's the status?
It was referred back to Ways and Means on the Senate floor. Yes, and then the co-chairs referred it back to the subcommittee.
Okay, so it's here, and we don't need to take any action.
Except to, if you approve the amendment to AIM.
Okay, so we do have the bill in our possession.
Yes, we do. Let's see, do we go back to the full Ways and Means to work this amendment thing, and then go back to the Senate?
Yes.
And then, because it is a Senate bill, we'll have to then, after it's through the Senate, then we'll have to bring it back to the House.
Yeah.
Okay.
Having an amendment, I beg your pardon, I moved an amendment.
It's been moved by Representative Hansen, and having heard the advice and counsel of Legislative Fiscal Officer Dallas Long, are there any objections?
About the
fiscal office representative, Dallas Long. You are our fiscal officer for the day. Until Ms. Bailey comes on, then she's our fiscal officer for the day. Are there any objections? If there are no objections, then with this technical amendment to Section 2 of Senate Bill 5536, incorporating and interlineating the language Baron described, we'll go ahead then and move this back to the full Ways and Means, Senate Bill 5536. Give it to order, and Senator Crowe carried it on the last round, and Senator Ferrioli to the floor, and Representative Trump to the House. The problem with that, we haven't had it yet, Representative Trump at the House, but it'll be perfect when you get it there, and you'll do a perfect job.
Wonderful.
Makes it so much easier.
I'll carry it on
To
the committee.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Senator Troy. I appreciate
sure.
the question. Okay, and we just have one other item of business. We welcome our Legislative Fiscal Office representative, Dean Bailey, and I will recognize also our clerk for the day, Jenny Penn, being our starting clerk today. This is relative to a work session to go ahead with the amended language on Senate Bill 5503 from the Capital Planning Commission. We'll open the work session on 5503. Ms. Bailey.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. What you have before you is a half a page. The top is the original draft of the budget note that I shared with Representative Butler, and then also shared it with the commission staff, and they suggested the modifications to the budget note that appear at the bottom. I would like to make just a couple of little changes to that, and so I would recommend that the budget note to be included in the budget report for the Capital Planning Commission read as follows. The Capital Planning Commission shall report to the legislature on proposed development of state facilities after the commission has approved an updated area master plan, but before any state facility is planned to be constructed within the area.
Those two words, one word inserted and one word changed.
Correct. Two words changed. change A to any and improvement to facility.
Okay. Any, but before any state facility.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so, then I also took the F off of area because they were getting a singular in the sense.
Okay. All right. So with the changes to line 3 and 4, the commission has approved an updated area master plan, but before any state facility is planned to be constructed within the area. Are there any objections to that language? Who do they report to when it says the legislature?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, they would report to the Legislative Assembly if the legislature is in session, and would report, I believe, to the Emergency Board if the legislature is not in session.
Now, let me just ask procedurally, when the legislature is not in session, do all members of the legislature receive copies of the actions of the emergency board? I don't recall that they do.
No, they're not secret. They are public.
No,
I don't think they get out to every member. Maybe they should, but they don't.
Well, and certainly I do know this, that each and every action that is taken by the emergency board is published broadly in the valley. So as long as we continue to subscribe, those of us who may live outside the valley, as long as we continue to subscribe to the Safety Journal, if we're not serving on the emergency board, then we would know of that action. Again, the concern was to make sure that the legislature know of the action. And again, this is the budget note, doesn't have the effect or weight of law. This has not been the policy of the past, but we insert it with the hope of avoiding any concern relative to siting of state facilities on any of the, did we say, 9 master plans, area master plans?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there are 9 area master plans in Marion and Polk County.
Okay.
Is there a single area master plan, or are there 9 separate?
There are 9 separate.
So maybe we ought to reflect that in the notes. Are we talking about each of the area plans?
Yeah, the Capital Planning Commission, before they would do anything in any of the master plans, it was my understanding, any of the area.
Oh, okay, so it would be for each of them.
Right, it would cover this should be all inclusive, Senator, is my understanding.
Okay.
That's great. Your follow-up, Representative Messerly.
Is this boilerplate language, or and what I'm considering, it's only a report, it doesn't require action by any of the bodies, so could we put language in there to that they send a written report to all members of the legislature?
Mr. Chair, Representative Messerly, we certainly can put that language in there. The question I would have would be whether or not the commission has adequate resources for the mailing.
It'd be a total of 90 folks possible. Yes, if you'd like, Mr. Cass, if you'd like to come forward and maybe address that, maybe you can help us overcome our dilemma.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure I can overcome the dilemma, but these, let me just clarify, these master plans, these 9, it's almost embarrassing, I guess, to say this, but the updates of these plans occurs not very often. I think most of our plans were adopted in the 80s, and we are now methodically going through each of those master plans to update them, but it takes a considerable amount of time to do that. So I would imagine that at any given time, and these are not, it's like a comprehensive plan for a city that are not updated. So I would think any mailing of to 90 legislators would not be an onerous responsibility on our budget.
And it would only be at a time when a facility was in the process of being moved towards actually siting and for the actual location of a facility to be constructed, planned for construction. So we're talking basically 80 letters of notification, which would, or 90 letters of notification, And again, it does not specify how the legislature should be notified. As a budget note, it would come before the E-Board. As a matter of courtesy, I think Mr. Capp certainly recognizes the concern that we've got to make sure that all standing seated members of the legislature be given an opportunity to at least have notice so that they could better inform the constituency of what perhaps is happening back in the Capitol whilst they're away.
And Mr. Chair, may I make one additional comment?
Certainly.
As we've been working through this language since we were here last, one thing that occurred to me, and I've mentioned to both the committee staff and our budget analyst, we do prepare a report biannually relating to new capital projects that are being proposed by state agencies. If you look carefully at the statute, that report is not required to be submitted to the legislature. It is required to be submitted to the Department of Administrative Services prior to the governor's recommended budget so that there is an analysis of those projects. But historically, and again, not by statute, but by practice, but not recently, those or something comparable to those reports had been sent to the legislature back in the distant history of the Capital Planning Commission. Because of the makeup of the commission with legislative, executive, and professional staff combination, there was an annual report written by the Capital Planning Commission that would provide an update of all of its activities over the last year and what projects were coming forward. We've not been in the practice of doing that, and I think in a way this may sort of reinstitute that practice and perhaps provide the very information that you're looking for.
That's an excellent point. May I just, excuse me, Beth, just for a moment, Representative Krupp is, I believe, offering, maybe at this very moment,
amendment, sir, amendment.
Busy working late. I think Representative Krupp is offering a piece of legislation which would require that all members being seated as members of the legislature have some mandatory training, and help me please, Representative Trump.
Mr. Chair, actually, with leadership, we've worked out that instead of making that statutory requirement, that we will do it by House rule and Senate rule. For freshman members, mandatory for freshman members to attend week-long budget training classes the previous week before swearing in. That will be conducted, the budget class will be conducted by LFO and revenue for the purposes of informational education regarding the budget to freshman members, and at that point it would be optional also for already seated members. But the intent there is to establish that by rule as opposed to doing it in statute.
Okay.
And set a precedent for the future because of term limits.
The institutional memory. And as Representative Krupp has already used an acronym, you see, he's got a great institutional memory already, which no one else that comes to town would have.
Judy, do you have a quarter with you? I just made a boo-boo. Okay, I owe the kitty a question. I am forever indebted, sir.
I'm indebted to that.
Mr. Chair, yeah. Mr. Chair, no, please, I have to accept one of my bills.
Why don't we go ahead? Are there any other comments or objections?
I was just wondering how this all works, if you don't mind.
Sure, that's fine.
Just a question. You say they don't update the area master plans for each area very often. Do they go ahead and construct facilities without having them in the plan? Say some agency wants to build a building. Do you have to adjust the master plan to reflect that, or can you just go ahead and build the building?
Mr. Chair and Senator Coe, that's a very good question. The master plans have, over time, have been written with greater and greater detail. Master plans, several versions earlier, were fairly general land use descriptions, the street configuration, the waterways and so forth, like one might find in a comprehensive plan for a city or a county. Since then, and the trend, and it's something that we're encouraging, that is they've become more of a facilities plan, a development plan for the agencies that occupy those lands. That's wiser, I think, but in some ways more difficult, because not all agencies know exactly where they're headed with respect to their own facilities needs. So the answer is, with respect to, for example, to the Capitol Mall, I think for all of the construction that was in the late 80s and early 90s, there was not a proposal that was made that was not consistent with the language of the master plan. No master plan adjustments needed to be made to accommodate those projects.
Well, but the question, but those projects weren't in the master plan. They just fit the general guidelines of the master plan. Seems to me that what people here want to know is the legislature going to know whenever there's a proposal to do something, not whether the master plan has been adjusted, but when there's a proposal. And if you can go ahead and do things without adjusting the master plan because it gives a general description of something, then you don't know about the specific thing that I think you're wanting to know about, Mr. Chair.
And I think the language is... after the commission has approved an updated area master plan, but before any state facility is planned to be constructed within the area.
Let's see, you're tying it to after the commission has approved an updated master plan. They may not approve an updated master plan, but they may go ahead and have a facility that they're going to build. Don't you want to be notified about the facility?
Yes, and I thought that's what it did, that after the commission has approved...
But they're not approving any updated master plan. So what you really want to say is, shall report to the legislature on any state facility that's being planned to be constructed. That's what you want to know, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Other than all the rest of the 40.
What you're saying is, and your point, Senator, is that the point that the master plan is not updated just because a new facility is added.
All right. And
is that correct, then, Mr. Chair?
That's correct. And I think Senator Coe's really gone to the hardest thing that we care a great deal about, and it's because indicated that there's an evolution towards what Senator Coe is seeking. That then would, I mean, if we were doing master plans that way, where they in fact were defining the future facility needs of state agencies on state properties where we have adopted plans, then the reporting that we would do would be inclusive of any planned facility then that fits within that plan.
So we would just delete the language in the second, beginning in the second sentence, or second line, after the commission has approved an updated area master plan, but, so that the new language would read, the Capital Planning Commission shall report to the legislature on proposed development of state facilities before any state facility is planned to be constructed within the area.
Sure.
Okay. Is that acceptable language then?
Representative Hansen, you're a man who understands a great deal about construction.
Well, but not construction of language. Just building. I still have problems with the whole concept, but I don't have any real problem with converting on it.
Okay.
I guess, in terms of notifying the legislature, I think we've got enough notification through all of the budget deliberations that we do. Then this one in particular, if we really want every member of the legislature to be informed that the State Department is going to be creating a facility, all this does is just apply it to the Salem area, which is only maybe half the facilities in the state. So I don't think it's still going to get you exactly where you want to be. But and I think if the real interest is to be informed in terms of what facilities are being created, that'd be through doing a lot of diligence in the budget or in talking to departments that a member of the legislature has a real interest in. But I have no problems in terms of language this year.
The Capital Planning Commission only does the work for the master planned areas within Polk and Marion County. They would not be responsible for other, for instance, the State Office of Employment in Eugene that was recently completed. That's done through through a completely different function. So that would be area by area within the agency themselves, and that doesn't come through the Capital Planning Commission.
Sure. I'm wondering, you know, I know we're doing this connected with the Capital Planning Commission, the budget, so it makes sense to have a budget that relates to their budget. But I wonder if DAS couldn't tell us better about the whole state when they're building facilities rather than the Capital Planning Commission. Maybe this ought to be in DAS's budget, but they ought to be. What do you think?
Mr. Chair, Senator Phil, I think that actually makes some sense, but I'll also comment that, you know, there was really no central clearinghouse for the building of state facilities. Now, the facilities division of DAS encompasses, they have jurisdiction over many, but they have no jurisdiction over higher education, for example, and or the Department of Transportation and so forth. So it is an issue that state agencies, facilities people, and the Capital Planning Commission have discussed in the past. How do you capture everything in one place to be able to do appropriate facilities planning as well as determining the fit within various jurisdictions? Senator Mannix frequently will file in past sessions, has filed bills to expand the jurisdiction of the Capital Planning Commission statewide. For what reason? For this very reason, mm-hmm. to try to get to some kind of a central clearinghouse where the development of state facilities we can inform people about what's happening, both from a fiscal standpoint, which is not our responsibility, but just from the standpoint of what impact it's going to have on the local.
This is certainly a beginning point. It's not the end, but it might be the main thing. If there's no objection to that language, then as modified, we'll go ahead and I believe we passed all of the fiscal portion of the budget. As I recall, we did all of the fiscal portion and approved the fiscal portion of the Capital Planning Commission's budget. And so with that one additional modification, thank you, Senator Schroll, for helping us get that deleted down so we get that just down to a single item there, that the Capital Planning Commission shall report to the legislature on proposed development of state facilities before any state facility is finally constructed within the area.
Question, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Since we've taken out all references to areas, do you want to leave that within the area or is that it?
Plan to be constructed. Let's strike within the area. That meet with the, because the areas were capitalized because there are 9 area master plans in Polk and Marion County.
Or the other thing within
the area master plans. That probably is the better language to amplify that. Within the area master plans, period, and master plans are both capitalized.
Okay.
And the
so moved, Mr. Chair.
It's been moved. Any objections? There being none, we've had that budget note, and we are refreshed. Thank you very much. We have no meeting scheduled for tomorrow or Friday.
Wow.
So,
great.
We're adjourned.